Hi, you're listening to your Route to Wellbeing podcast. This podcast shares strategies, insights, nuggets, and tools to inspire and support you as you step boldly towards creating the well-being that you desire and deserve. Each week, I share insights and inspiration from different people who have expertise across one or more of the 11 domains of well-being. Each one of the guests that I've chosen to talk to have found the clues through their lives and experiences, through their careers and their knowledge, that I want you to have access to. My big question is, how can we all pulse with energy and truly live while we're alive? I believe that these people that I'm talking to have some of the crucial answers. So relax, listen up, and thank you for tuning in. Please remember to leave us a review and also to share this podcast with anyone in your network who you think it may help. Good afternoon. I'm Sue Fullergood from the Energy Incubator and the host of the podcast, Your Route to Wellbeing. And I am so excited today to have with me Lama Muris, who is a very good friend of mine of many years now, and whose amazing work with yoga and many other healing modalities has been something I've experienced. I've even brought Lama into Body Brilliance to come and run workshops for us here and teach some yoga. So I really, really am so thrilled to have this opportunity to really get inside Lama's head and tease out some of the brilliance that lies there so that you can all benefit from it and be inspired by her passion for yoga and movement and health and well-being and nutrition and many, many other things, and can benefit from her wealth of expertise and knowledge. So really, really thank you, Lama. It's taken us about 6 months to find ourselves a little gap to chat. That's how busy you are with all your traveling around the world, teaching yoga and workshops and things. But let me tell you just a little bit about Lama. She's been doing yoga for 25 odd years, not only yoga, but also meditation. She's a very experienced teacher and practitioner. And as I've already told you, travels all over the place teaching and sharing information and running retreats and workshops. And she teaches yoga teachers as well. Not only that, she studied under the Institute for Food and Healing in New York. And I must say, I've learned an enormous amount about how to use food to best advantage for your health and nutrition from Lama. She stayed in my home and she taught me many of her wonderful cooking techniques, and I use them daily. She's also a hypnosis coach and a Japanese facial massage practitioner, and she studied psychology way back when in Amsterdam. And so really, Lama and I met at Osho retreat in India, and I just did her yoga classes and found them absolutely life-changing and body-changing. And so that was why I wanted to get her work involved in my business. And so, yeah, having introduced you a little bit there, Lama, I'd love to hand the microphone over to you and invite you to just share with us a little bit about your career path, how you came to become a yoga practitioner, and yeah, just tell us all about it.
Yes, Sue, thank you for inviting me to do this. And you have such a beautiful introduction. I have almost nothing to say anymore. Yes, how did I come to yoga? I just fell in love. Basically, I was, it's probably more than, 25 years ago, I was, a friend of mine, she was asking, come on, Lava, you want to come to my yoga class? I said, no, yoga is boring. I need to move, I need to do something. I was always moving from very small on, and I thought, no, this is too boring for me. She said, come on, come. And then I said, okay, she's a friend. Yeah, why not? So I went to a yoga class, and then something happened. I just fell in love. I fell in love with this amazing practice that is on so many levels working. It's not only the physical, which I needed always a kind of a challenge and go for things, but it was on a very different level that I felt that things becoming more together. And after that yoga class, I never stopped. Never, never. And that was actually the beginning of a long evolving passion that also never stopped. And I didn't want to become a yoga teacher, by the way, at all. It was just I found something in my life, and I just continued doing. So I started doing many trainings and many workshops, and I traveled quite a bit all over the world. There was a lot in India. I lived in New York. I lived in Aspen in Germany. Originally from Holland, and actually, I did some teacher trainings and another ones, and just to deepen my insight and to live my passion. That was actually what it was. Until actually, they started asking me, come, Lama, come and teach a class. And no. And then, okay, there was no teacher, I was jumping in, and that's how it basically started. Yeah, and that whole love for it never, never, ever left me. That's something that I always can tap into every day, basically. Yeah.
Can you say a little bit more about what you love so much? What does it offer you? What does it make you feel?
Yeah. First of all, it's that moment when I step on the mats, and there's a moment of already then coming back to myself. It's this moment of coming into the body. Yoga is about first starting with the body, so all different other layers can also come more in tune. I explain it a bit more what I mean by that. It's first taking a moment of silence, taking a moment of being present at this very, very moment, because of course the mind is all the time somewhere else, except for in the here and the now. And that is just a moment. Come on that same mat. I also travel with my own mat everywhere. Somehow it feels very nice to have my own mats. And then there is a certain, of course, a certain flow, a certain sequence of a practice. And these sequences are ancient. The yoga poses itself are ancient, so there must something in it that we still use them in this time, in this. It gives me a physical strength. It gives me flexibility. It gives me also a certain, as they say, balancing the body. It also balances the mind. It's a very wholesome practice. There's a beautiful in the Yoga Sutras, one of the main amazing scriptures in yoga, and it basically says when you start balancing the body, there comes an equanimity of the mind. And these are not just words, it's something that happens. So yes, I love to be healthy and good in my body and strong and flexible at the same time. I like the variation, the different poses, you can every day actually very much adjust the practice in how it is right for you that moment. If there is a certain injury, you can work with it or you can work around it. So it's very broad. Yeah, and then after I step off my yoga mat, I always feel different. So in times, for example, challenging times in my life, only the one thing I would never skip is with my yoga practice in the morning. And it would change a certain gestalt, something was different afterwards. And I could still feel shaky, or could still it would be a challenging day, but something was more grounded, more rooted, more centered. So it's also really my own experience that it's not only a practice that I do, a profession that I have. It's the way I'm living. It's something that is very, very important as a ground. Yeah.
So I mean, I've experienced all those things that you describe in my own yoga practice, which is nowhere near at the level of yours, but I really nod my head in agreement with what you're saying, that you do connect with your body and therefore with yourself, and that you can find that equanimity and that equipoise in your brain and in your mind. And that you do feel different after you've been on the mat. What really stupefies me is, as I continue my own yoga practice, that there's so much incredible insight and understanding of the body that is demonstrated by the poses. And you know, just by way of an example, we're always trying to get the hip and the knee to work together. And to, you know, get the outside rotators of the hip to control the knee so it doesn't roll inwards. And all the poses literally encourage that. So I just am always blown away by the incredible insight and wisdom that underpins the poses. And then to take it one step further, you know, nowadays neuroscience has shown us unequivocally that the mind and the body are linked, and when you change the body, you change the mind. And now we know that that's a scientific fact, and yet the yogis knew this how many hundreds of years ago and have been practicing it for decades. And the last thing I want to highlight that you said that I so recognize is that it's so versatile because you never get bored. Well, I've never got bored. And for me, that's quite extraordinary because I easily get bored with things if they don't constantly challenge me. But you can always do the pose better or deeper or differently or more expertly or whatever. So there's no space to ever stop growing with a practice. And I honestly think that that's, you know, one of the reasons it's prevailed for so many decades and centuries. It just becomes more and more popular rather than less and less popular. But I'd love to just ask you, I know it's got a lot to do with spirituality, and also mind body wholeness, but and I do find that some people are suspicious of it because they say it doesn't fit with their religion or you know, I'm Christian or whatever it is, and therefore I can't practice yoga. Can you talk a little bit to that and maybe allay people's fears a little bit around that subject?
It's interesting. Right now, giving a teacher training, Hatha Flow Yoga teacher training here in Holland, and there's people from many different backgrounds and from many different cultures, which is always very interesting, and from many and different religions. Yoga actually is about, it's not about your culture, it's not about your religion, it's basically coming back to yourself and through these physical practices and to these, and not only the physical asana practice, but also through, for example, pranayama, breathing, through pure meditation, closing the eyes and just watching, witnessing whatever there is. Any culture, any religion, how to say, it doesn't matter really. It's really about the individual finding its own space, it's coming into its own space, in its own being. How to say, there is this, sometimes you can hear, and I was actually a bit turned off by it in the beginning, that the use of it comes from the Hinduism. That was a part of the Hinduism, and they use sometimes in certain directions, yoga lineages, they use a lot of the gods, the Hindu gods. And that is because it comes from there, and some teaching goes very much into that. Now, for me, I'm less interested in that. What I can see is that it can be metaphors for something that we can learn from. For example, I say the god of Shiva is a god, but Shiva, what it actually represents is that in life we have always our ups and our downs, and sometimes this periods where there's a lot of everything falls apart. It's like we think, oh, now maybe it's you lose your house or relationships or ship or family, or many things can happen. And that in these moments, Shiva, for example, represents something like first something has to actually break down to come back into a new space of something completely different, something that starts building up. Maybe that part was old. Maybe it was an old jacket you were wearing and you need to take that coat off. Something like that. So there is, in that sense, they use sometimes these gods, for example. But first of all, that's not needed to my insight. I think it's just because it comes from that. And I noticed that it alienates people. Is that the right word in English?
Alienates, yes.
Alienates, such a bad word. Alienates people from to really stay true to yourself, to bring more awareness in your practice, to bring more awareness in your daily life. And that is cross-cultural, that is cross-religion. And of course, every yoga teacher can bring his own input and his own color onto it. And so it will be also different for people. Some will be very attracted to more, and I'm not talking then about spiritual, but more to that part of using all the gods as metaphors, for example. I think spirituality is something different, which has nothing to do with any religion, with any culture. It's something that the very basic question is, who am I? And that is a deep inquiry, and that by taking off layers and layers, who you are not, I think that is actually the practice. And yes, yoga practice can be, also the asana practice can be very confronting. Talking about the ego, for example, if you stand in your tree pose and yesterday it went so well, today you fall out and you see all these people standing beautifully and tall there. You think, Jesus, I'm so bad. And God, all the others are so good in it. And why can't I get this? And these things. So it can be very much a mirror for whatever you are doing, because eventually it's all about awareness. And that has nothing to do with any religion. I think there is confusion often in that, by the way. And that is very, sometimes very devotional. That is very devotional styles of yoga. This yoga who are way more only focused on the body, I think, is also interested to, as you were just mentioning, also that body and mind, they're just moving together. They are two friends. They go hand in hand. So that is very important, and it deepens the practice because it's more than just a physical practice.
I think what you're saying is really valuable, because you can't do a yoga pose without having your mind and your body in the same place at the same time.
Yes.
If your mind wanders, you will fall over.
Yes.
And if your mind wanders, you will not get all the many, many details of the practice and the pose correct.
Yes. There is no correct pose even. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's very much a practice of presence. And for me, as a mindfulness practitioner, it's very much about mindfulness, mindful movement, because there's no way to be in a yoga pose without your mind watching and being aligned, you know.
I guess that's why we also went so well together, because that was something I always felt very much when I came to South Africa, which, by the way, was amazing always to come. Your very welcoming home and the beautiful, gorgeous people. I always felt very strongly also in your practice, in your physio, in your that it's never was never a separation, because it is a certain oneness, and it's depending.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so aligned to well-being, which is what we're really talking about here today, how would you see yoga fitting in as a means to creating and cultivating well-being and bringing about well-being in the body? And yeah, in the life, in the mind. Can you talk a little bit to well-being? I think you have alluded to it a little bit already, but can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think well-being is has also many different layers. I think a healthy body is essential to also for, I don't say a perfect body, that everything needs to work perfectly, but a healthy body, or to really put the energy into that incredible, precious body that we have that does everything every day for us. I think that is also a certain space to connect with. It's a certain gratitude, and it gives a certain, I mean, honoring the body. That's it's also when I do that, and I do that with other bodies, it does give also on another level again a feeling of it that feels truly right. If I'm ignoring my body, something is also does feel so neglected. So I think besides that, these poses, these asanas are so, as you already mentioned, so beautifully actually developed somehow. How did these people know that it was such a created such an effect and such an opening and such a move of energy and such a strength, and keep on going with it. So that on itself, for me, it is you come in your body, and because there's so many different forms, styles of yoga, that you don't need to be an acrobat, or you don't need to be like this thin, or you anyone can do yoga. So just finding the style that works for you, and that is sometimes it takes some time to discover. And once you align with that, it gives you also certain joy in the body of, oh, it just, I sometimes can see it with people. There's a certain joy coming around them even. And so that I think is definitely very important for feeling well. And it's more, yes, I talked already about it's a center for me, it's a total centering exercise, so to say. It brings myself back to right now, right here. The mind goes all the ways on somewhere, mostly not here. My mind, everyone's mind. And this brings it back to a certain more quietness. And from there, I start making different decisions. My mind is clearer. There is a certain deep relaxation. And I'm so all that is for me really well-being. And that certain decisions come out of place of where I just know I'm connecting more with my intuition also, as if all kind of layers that are a bit in the way of more close and true to myself are kind of removed. So I think that is an utter well-being. I think that is eventually what well-being is, to be as true with yourself and in your full potential and really respecting your limits, that there comes a certain also love and respect for yourself and others through that. So that's, yeah, is that an answer on the question?
I think that's a great answer, and it takes me into my next question because basically it's popular nowadays to do yoga because it's so strengthening for the body, and it leaves the body looking great. But can you say something about what else? You know, I think some people, rightly so, they might want to only practice yoga for the physical benefit it offers them. But can you invite them through your understanding to consider the many, many other offerings that it has?
Yes. So what is often, and I like that a lot in my classes. So I teach classes of from really beginners, more advanced, all kind of different sessions, workshops. So there is to me such a variety of people are coming, and many start in the beginning. They have all they want to do for the physical benefits. Some have this thing of, okay, I want to have a more quiet mind, but many people in the beginning, they want to be more flexible or more strong. So again, then I start with the body because it's very close, and there is something in this whole practice and these poses that on another level, things are balancing out too. But how I also more clearly introduce that deeper layers of yoga in classes is, for example, to work with breathing and to work with pranayamas, as it's called. And pranayama literally means expansion of prana, of your life energy. It's not just a breathing exercise. And so how you can regulate your breath, for example, and how what a difference it is, and on many of us are with this lot of high up in the chest breathing, while it's very different when you breathe from deeply down there from the belly, for example. So getting an experience of, hey, something changes when I start changing my breath, and I can do it myself. And I can do it in the day instead of a coffee break. I'm going to do a breath break. How is that? So it's very practical. And then to bring awareness to saying from, wow, when you, for example, very upset or very angry, just check where your breathing is, where's the focus of your breathing, and see if you can change the quality of your breath, how it changed the quality in your emotions or your mind. So that is very practical. It's not esoteric. It's not spiritual. It's very simple because you feel it. It's very down to earth. So, and I think that is a way to provide tools that people easily, which they have, everyone is breathing. And everyone knows when there's a bit of awareness that everything changes when you're breathing high up in the chest. So work with the things that there are. And breath is our life energy. You have 5 minutes without it, and that's it. So, and that beautiful, amazing thing that somehow something took care that we don't need to think of breathing. So we do it naturally by itself. Luckily, otherwise, if you would have to think of breathing, well, we couldn't do anything else. But then to use that thing that we all natural have as a really tool to work with, and to come to, because after some, and there are many different pranayamas, these breathing practices, and they have all different effects, and they all, by the way, already described like the Middle Ages, and the ancient yogis, there's all in the very old scriptures, there's all talk about breath and what breath actually does. But that is doesn't matter, they thousands of years ago described it, but for people now, that's the same. Oh, so it's close. It's not something which you think, oh, I need to do all kind of things. You breathe every day. And then, so taking that in, and also taking in that, I bring in that there's something when the body becomes more balanced, the mind becomes more balanced, and sit for a moment. And it doesn't mean that you need to sit in a lotus position and you have your eyes closed and you see it all in this beautiful yoga journals, these pictures, which means meditation, but that is also something people think, yeah, but I always have thoughts. I said, absolutely, you always have thoughts because the mind is actually an action. It's just an action of thoughts, and we all have that. So there's nothing strange in you for that.
But for a moment, you can watch those thoughts or be
Exactly.
aware of that.
So then the moment you think, oh no, and I forgot to be aware of these thoughts and to watch it, then you are aware. So there you are. So it's not as mysterious and mystical and that it is. It's very down to earth. And it's an expansion of, oh yeah, I was again somewhere else with my thoughts, and oh, I know it is when I lie down and I don't need to do anything. That I'm thinking, oh, I need to get my kids from school, and oh, I need to do this and that. And this very moment, there's nothing to do, but that mind keeps on running. So there is, and usually when I go a little bit more in this, which you, of course, also know very well, this mindfulness techniques, is that when you wash your dishes, you can be very mindful of how you wash your dishes. By a more a physical action, mindfulness can be easier than that you start already watching your thoughts, your emotions, for example. So watch your body. What does it do when you walk? Watch your feet onto the floor. And then from there, okay, if you can watch more this, the body, more the gross layer, so to say, maybe you can watch more subtle layers. Maybe you can watch suddenly, oh, there's that thought always coming back. And maybe it's that thought undermining me all the time. And maybe there's a big judgment. That's what this mind does. So, kind of step by step. And people usually very relieved that they don't need to stop thinking.
Exactly, that they're not wrong for thinking. The practice
So,
is the awareness.
yeah. Yeah. And that's. You know, yoga is not separate from life itself. It's just living a life of being more aware.
It's just a moment to tune in, or an
Yeah.
hour to tune
Yes, yes,
in instead of
yes, yes.
outward.
Exactly. Yeah. So
So one of the things I found so special about the practice of yoga with you was the gentleness and the kindness with which you practice, and with that you enabled me to learn. I'm not as good as it at it as you by any stretch of the imagination, quite dictatorial about how things have got to be done, and with my body. So I can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think self-care is something so vital in the world today, and people really, really struggle to prioritize taking care of themselves and being kind to themselves. I think lots of people really, really find that scary, or maybe they're frightened that if they're kind to themselves, that they'll drop their standards, or they won't try so hard. And I just found I went so much further with you because you were so kind.
There is a so it's actually the first principle in the Yoga Sutras. That's a beautiful scripture that is actually written in the time of Buddha. That's where already it was brought yoga very much together. Like all there were all different scriptures, and it made it very systematic and practical, brought all the yoga insights together, or many of them at least. And there's an eightfold path of yoga that is eight steps to eventually come to. And yoga is about union, is about complete, yeah, how to say, you can say enlightenment, you can say it's about union of the body mind. It's being in a complete oneness with oneself and the world. It's easy to talk about it. I'm not there. And it is, but that's the Eightfold Path of Yoga, are these steps. And the first step of that Eightfold Path of Yoga is ahimsa. And ahimsa means full respect for the body, loving that body so much. And from there, taking your choose what you do. And I had a I have my own experience with that too. I was pretty wild also. Sometimes I still am, but doing all kind of, I did anything, any sport, any acrobatic stuff that you, anything. I love that. Also, I injured myself a lot. Also, I had this, I want to do it better. I had this kind of competitive mind also. And by and by, when, yeah, and that started really more in the yoga practice because it's so much awareness required that I became kinder to myself, but also more really wanting to explore what it does to me. What do I need? What is coming up in my mind? Why do I do something like this? And where can I find joy in this practice? And not because I'm better than someone else or because I'm actually often it's competition to yourself. I need to be better than yesterday. And I've found that slowly, slowly so exhausting, basically, and so not. And I injured myself. And again, my body gave me the from Lama, this is stop it. So there is a certain kindness, yeah, involved in the yoga practice, which there is the space for if you stay with the breathing and you slow down in that sense. It's not about rushing and doing all you can do. All kind of things in yoga, but if you stay with the breath, that gives you already a centeredness. And when you're centered, you can almost not hurt yourself. And that, and as I say, I had to go through quite some injuries and two things. And I still see, like I was just sharing with you now, I'm a little bit struggling with a hip injury. That I have the tendency because I say, yeah, but I can do anything. And then to slow down, to stay, and then make it a healing practice for myself. And that is so amazing. So then seeing all kind of different bodies on the mat, different people on the mat, it's so beautiful to find out from where is their potential? Where can they, how can they come into that? And where is that limitation? How can they start respecting the limitations? Finding out. And I do also think it's very important to teach very precisely. So know the alignment. Know so you prevent also injuries to happen. And especially with huge classes, it's sometimes a dance because many different levels. How can you make it a safe practice? And also a joyful practice for everyone. So yeah, I think, and maybe I don't know how about your experience, but to the more I came in contact with more true what is good for me, what where it I cannot teach different than that, also for others. That's what I mean. And it's definitely not a like. If there's a Vinyasa 3 level, it's fun. And there's a lot of, and I love it too, but there's also a beautiful beginner's Hatha class where I myself will say, whoa, what an alignment where I can learn myself still from. So.
It's so interesting. I used to do quite a lot of those Vinyasa 3, sort of the advanced level classes, and I loved them to bits and pieces, and I'd come out sweating and exhausted. And then after I had my accident, I had a really badly damaged my left side, and especially my left foot, knee and pelvis, and my shoulder on the leg. So really doing yoga was impossible. And I really tried to remember the principles of loving kindness and respect for the body. And I used to say to myself, just be curious to see how it feels. And I'd call myself sweetie or lovely Sue or something like that, so I could be really kind. My body would go, I can't, I definitely can't take all the weight on that foot. And I would say, just give it a try and see what happens. you know, respecting my limitations, it was literally unbelievable how I improved. And I really do attribute my greatest recovery, you know, to the yoga practice that I've done. Very, very slowly, mostly on my own, just reintroducing poses and trying things. I mean, now in the last year or so, a year and a half, even I can do just about anything badly, but nevertheless, I can engage with it. But in the beginning, I couldn't do anything. Really, it was when I came with that spirit of curiosity and exploration into the poses, with loving kindness, it was amazing what my body showed me it was capable of doing, and how we discovered together, me and my foot, for example, that for short periods of time I could stand on it, and then slowly, slowly, I couldn't feel it, but I could s find my balance through it. And so I do think there's something so beautiful about coming with gentleness, coming with kindness, and also that deep, deep respect for the body, and for its intelligence and its wisdom and its knowing.
It's a sort of humbling experience also, especially when I had a knee operation already quite a while ago. I mean, I couldn't do a child's pose. And to start learning from nothing to slowly building it up, it was a very humbling, very much bringing me right here, because that's what was there is, and that's what my body needed. And it also was telling me after the week or so, Lama, go bicycling. And everyone said, you are crazy. And I said, no, I have to bicycle. Someone helped me on the bicycle, and I was bicycling, and I thought I was in paradise. It was so good for my knee, and my healing was so fast. But that was also that. And the other hand, I also didn't limit myself by what everyone else said. But I was very loving and kind to the body. And the body said, go bicycling. And there I went. And then I did it every day for 2 hours. It was the fastest healing ever. My surgeon said, what did you do? Yeah, so
Is to find that balance, right? And not to insist using
not
the mind. That's what I tripped up against so many times, was my mind would say, oh, wonderful, now I can do this. Next, you know, the striving, driving mind, with which I was born. And most people have a similar mind, maybe not to the degree that I do, but you know, that sort of thinking pattern, and then my body would say no, too far, and I think that recognizing the teammanship between the mind and the body, and really working, you know, as with the body as a teammate, is so, yeah, really helpful. So can you talk? Yeah, just to say,
Can I,
please.
yeah, because I just reminded of something is very beautifully described also in yoga, is about it's very like three different minds, and one is more a rajasic mind. It's a mind that really also go for it, very enthusiasm, but also can completely be exhausted, not respecting anything. And there is and that is a type of mind. There's another tendency, these are kind of tendencies, which is more a tamasic mind, which is a mind which already gives up before it even tried. So that is a mind that actually needs often a lot of stimulation. I mean, you don't need stimulation, but another mind needs that. And then to find, and it's called then the sattvic mind. And the sattvic mind is that kind mind that is really kind to yourself and to others. And that is actually why all these different minds eventually coming to a more kindness wherever you come from. For some will be already before you think, oh no, I don't want to do anything, I better watch something on Netflix or something. And the one who is very hard to move, some have it. And I see it also in the different styles I teach, that people for who it's sometimes, as generalizations what I'm saying now, but sometimes it's harder to move, they come more to a Yin or restorative class. And people who are like really like going for it all the time, they go to a Vinyasa level 3 or to a power yoga or this more very intense. And what often is interesting, that the one who actually with the rajasic mind comes to the vinyasa, come to a yin, see what happens there. Or all the way around, someone who is doesn't want to do too much, come to a vinyasa. And maybe not level 3, but come to a more intense physical practice. See what it does. See what you where you can expand. It is all, it's both expansion, and it's just a very interesting play. Yeah.
Engaging in stretching the limits and exploring different parts of yourself and body
Going
and
out of
experience.
certain habits that somehow, because we grew up in a certain way, or because we had to, I don't know, be in a certain environment, yeah, to really find your own true balanced being is so beautiful.
I know a lot of people say they don't like yoga because it hurts. And especially when you first begin and you're really, really stiff, there is something around it's really uncomfortable and it hurts, but probably hurts the ego as much as it hurts the body because it's so hard. And so, what do you suggest for those people who find it so stiff?
You know, when there's usually there's more women than men in classes and workshops and trainings. That's it's I think it's a given, but and men, when they come in and ask, did you do some yoga before? No, never. And then I said, oh, welcome. I said, but I'm so stiff. And then I said, but that's why you come to yoga, because when you want to learn tennis, you take tennis classes. You know, when you so that's a similar, it's a practice, and of course, it's also a way of having very tight hamstrings. No, you don't want to straighten your legs and fold forward over down straight away, because that can really injure yourself. So think that's very much a responsibility for a teacher also to really see who is in your class and build it up from there. And invite people and to say it's not about being the most flexible, it's about finding out where there is more space in the body. Because the moment you feel the stiffness means actually already you opening up. So how beautiful is that? And yeah, there is some work to do. It's not about lying on the couch and eating a bag of potato chips where you get more. It's not. And there's nothing wrong with couch and a bag of potato chips, but there is a certain there is a certain, especially if it's difficult, a certain discipline that just come. And then as a teacher, I give them many different ways of doing a certain pose, for example, using blocks, using belts, doing it in a variation or maybe different pose. There's so much to, it's like a big candy store where you can take out all the things you like, basically.
And I think using props is just so helpful. I mean,
Amazing.
I before I had my accident, I always used to think, if I was, I mean, I if I really told the truth about what I thought, then if I was good enough at yoga, which I really ought to be after all the hours I'd spent doing it, then I wouldn't need props. Those are for people who were just beginning or whatever. And I must say, since my accident, I mean, in the beginning, I used to use three or four blocks to be able to at least do something. And now, I use them sporadically in certain movements and always in others. But I've just realized that I could achieve so much more when I supported my body, and not try and hold a leg up if it can't be held up, but use a strap to hold it up.
Very much. And what do you think
For example,
about different proportions of the body? If you have these very long arms, it's very easy to do a binding. And if you have very short arms, well, it can really help to get that same opening. But maybe by chance you have smaller, how you say, shorter arms. So it's also very, if you think about it, really, these can be your biggest friends.
Yeah.
I
So it's about
remember, Sue.
meeting.
I
Yes.
remember, Sue, that when I was in your beautiful home, that you were practicing crow pose, remembering?
Yes.
Crow pose on the blow at that time. Now you do it like this, but that time I remember that very well. And slowly, slowly, you use the block, and then slowly, slowly, you know. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
And there she was.
It's about meeting the body where it's at, not where you want it to be.
Yes,
And
yes.
that's a real
Oh.
wisdom and a real respect and kindness
Yes.
that
Yes.
I
Oh.
think changes so many things in the way you live your life. Because if you can really be okay with where you're really at and it push your edges by all means, but don't sort of
Yes,
destroy the
yes,
edges
yes,
and
yes.
don't push yourself beyond your edges
Yes.
and hurt yourself. I think that's such a beautiful part about the practice.
Yes. And
Tolerate where you're at.
that's what we learn in the practice, you bring that also outside of your mat.
No, exactly.
Yeah. And that is so, that is why it's if you talk about well-being, if you so much connected, you can imagine that in relating with others, with taking decisions, it changes everything. Yeah.
And I think I also learned this from your practice is try your best. You know, your best is enough. I remember my son came to a class with you and he is very strong. Well, now we also know that he has got an autoimmune disease which affects his joint mobility. And so his mobility is particularly bad, but I remember you trying to teach him to do child's pose, and he
Yes,
couldn't
I
get
remember
anywhere near
I remember
his
that,
heels.
yes.
And it just do your best, and that's success because you did, what was enough, and you tried hardest, and that's enough. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about rejuvenation. I do believe that people are always on in the world today. They've got to look at social media and constantly be available at work, and they are exhausted. I'm sure it's the same in Holland. In fact, I know it's the same in Holland because a lot of my groups that I belong to have Dutch people in them, and it's certainly like that here in South Africa and particularly in Joburg. Stress is so endemic in our societies and lives. And so, can you talk a little bit about the rejuvenation that's available through yoga?
I know I just came back from Germany a week ago, so and they have also the when I do a round and I ask people from oh, what would you want to get out of this 5 days workshop? Really, 70% sit. I'm so erschöpft. I don't even know if I pronounce it well. It means actually I'm so exhausted. That is the main thing what comes out. And then and I think we learned very much that when you're tired you need to sleep, but this is a different tiredness. It's not a tiredness that you can that you become rejuvenated by a good sleep. It's a tiredness where tension have built up, where stress has built up, and now it's very hard to find out how you can actually relax anymore, how to do that, because that you don't know anymore how to turn off that button of always going, going, going. And so I do think with the yoga or asana practice, the pranayama, the space, giving the space for someone to be really in a how to say it, to have the practice that he or she needs. also the same coming back to what you need. And if you come back to that, you will take at a certain moment can say, okay, no, today this is enough. Now I take going for a walk, or I take a break, or I think there is a certain release literally of stress from the body when you do your asana practice. You come in a very different mind space, you release toxins, you there's a whole lot of things happening to the practice. That on itself, it is eventually learning what we talked a bit before also from where, what are your boundaries, where you can really nourish yourself, how you can nourish yourself, get to know yourself better and taking full responsibility for that. And then, yeah, going into the whole that somehow in this world, it's a lot about going, and then you are better, and then you are, and maybe it's not what you need, and how maybe to slow down would be the best for you, and maybe with even more better results. But having the courage to start exploring that. And I think a yoga practice, there is a certain discipline that you have to step on your mat, very simple. And then it's a certain building up, and it's a certain release on itself. And there is always some quiet moments. There's always a moment of closing the eyes and just feel and notice whatever is going on. I think all these practices, they at a certain moment, you cannot do that only on your yoga mat. If you do it every day, you start connecting. And I think the moment one starts really connecting, then there is also the courage to say, no, this is enough today. I need something else. All the pressure from the outside, really start connecting from, no, that doesn't feel right. I think that's how one can really build up a more healthy and happy and joyful and life. So, and rejuvenation, yes, of course, we all every minute, every second, we get older, but that's not the problem, I think. It's more the stay connected with what is and having the courage to do so, to stay connected, and then make your decisions based on that. And it's easy to say, and I'm also not absolutely not perfect in that. I see also sometimes in a little weeks in one row, so much teaching. I think, Lama, what are you doing? And I start feeling it in the body, in the mind. I have less mind space. I become more irritated. So I notice I'm me myself. I'm learning every day for that to see, okay, where. Because my tendency is also to always keep on going. So that is definitely a thing to, yeah, to keep on learning.
And to stop the
And to
action.
stop, total to stop. And also to certain, from after a certain time in the evening, I don't look at my emails anymore. I don't look at my phone anymore. I really take this is time, I cook my dinner and I take time for that, and I make sure I'm having a healthy, nice. Also, I love food, so that's also important. It's not only, it needs to be healthy, and it needs to be also tasteful, and it needs to support myself. I need also very nutritious food because I need my body a lot. I use my body a lot, and I love it also. So, to make these decisions, I could also quickly get something, but that's not. I know when I'm behind, when I'm started cooking and doing the things, I start relaxing so much. So something all and not skip all these for me very important thing. Now for someone else, cooking might be very stressful, so then don't choose it like that. But finding your thing where you can, I don't know, start painting something that isn't. Is not a functional, something that is just gives you joy. I think that's a very important thing to do that, just because it's joyful. That's it.
And you're worth it.
Yes,
You deserve
exactly.
it.
Exactly, yeah.
And you alluded to, and I just the last thing that I would really love to really touch on before we wrap up, and we could sit and talk all day as we have done many, many times before, but so that the listeners can get on with the other things they've got in their lives, stillness. I find that yoga offers me some opportunity for stillness, which my life seldom offers me. Can you talk to that a little bit and share your thoughts on why that's useful and why we would want that?
Yeah, I think that yoga is, and if I'm talking about yoga, is the asana practice, eh? Because yoga is so much more than only the physical practice. But it first of all creates a certain release, as we talked before, and that's a release of a very too much in the body, too much in the mind. If you at the end of a class, you lie in Shavasana, this something can sink. And this, you're not sleeping, but there is still a flame of awareness somehow. There is that certain presence. And you hear something, but it doesn't, you're not engaged in the mind. And I think that's very beautiful in just 1.5 hour class or something after that, that you can experience that moment of emptiness at the same time fullness. It's just perfect as it is, and you're still present. If you hear a sound or you hear what's happening, but you're not engaged. I think that is for me, that is a stillness. And it's not, as I said before, that there are no thoughts or, but there isn't kind of a, I always, to me, I often say it to students lying onto the mats, and allowing yourself to sink into the mats as if whole existence is holding you, this feeling of you can completely let go but not asleep. So it's a different state of consciousness. You're actually very aware. If there would be a fire outside, everyone would get up immediately, would be right out of the door. So I think stillness are these moments you can also have during the practice, that the mind is so focused and you're not thinking anymore of bringing your children to school or arranging something that you have later to do. You are just right now, right here. And that is as if the mind goes a bit on a holiday through a focus from going all over the place. And then they might this exquisite moment of, I don't know, being present, but not involved, engaged, something like that. That's is my own experience of stillness. And these moments can sometimes be longer and sometimes be not so long.
And there's a huge amount of deep rest that comes from that. For the coil of the nervous system, which is spinning and coiling and activating, and it just enables the nervous system to just deep, just come down a notch and be still.
And I think of, in thousands of years ago, when you live in the Himalayas and there's no traffic and there's no airplanes and you sit there, it's still around you. It's easy to sit still. But in our lives, when there's so much going on around us, and also in the world, and there's so much going on, and how to come to stillness, that's quite something, without closing off from being alive in the world. And I think this using the body in the first place to release so many of all these tensions, and that it's easier then to come to a stillness. Then we remember that was actually a few weeks ago, there was a woman, she came to a restorative class, and restorative is really only about restoring the nervous system. It's very little physical. It's using a lot of big props and bolsters and putting the body in a different position, sometimes for 10 minutes or more. And I saw something was happening, and I saw actually she's getting a panic attack. And so I took her out of class, say, come, let's took her out of class, said, I'm totally. She was breathing very fastly, and eventually, what she needed was to go for a run, not being in a restorative class, because she needed to first unload a lot of her stress, because this quietness, this silence in the restorative practice, for her mind was so became so loud that it was really too much for her. So to have an active practice, an active body practice, can just take off that stress, that overload, and then from there sinking into silence. That can happen, but that is more after that, after the result. You see also in this Eightfold Path of Yoga is beautifully built up. That of it, then you have the asanas, then you have the pranayamas, then you have the certain techniques where you bring your mind really to a focus, and then the mind goes in, and then concentration, and then meditation happens. But that is actually a meditation. I mean by that, watching, witnessing the mind, stillness. That stillness is basically happening. So it's step by step.
Stepwise process.
Yes,
And you
yes.
go through the steps.
And I'm sure when someone runs, go for runs, and so afterwards you can feel also so still. So there is a certain, quality after being totally engaged in the body. And then later on, the mind starts relaxing for some reason.
Oh, Lama, thank you very much for all that you have shared, and mostly just for your beautiful presence and for your stillness that you have around you and that you bring about in me. I really appreciate you, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. And I really hope that the listeners have gained something from listening. How can they get hold of you if they want to get hold of you? Is there a
Yes,
way
I have
to
a
come on your
website.
retreat?
I have a website. It's called sanasoma.com, sana healthy soma body.com, sanasoma.com. So they can always, if they have, they can reach me there. My email is there as well. They can see what I'm doing, and they want to find out if they want to have a little chat. Always welcome. Always happy to share.
Thank you, Lama. And I will put your details on the written part of about this podcast so people can
Thank
find
you,
them there
thank
too.
you. So
Thank
it's
you, thank you, thank you for your time and your sharing and your generosity, and have a movement-filled, magical rest of the day.
yes, thank you, Sue. It was a lovely, really enjoying this, as I always enjoy everything doing with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Route to Wellbeing. I hope that this episode has been really useful and helpful for you. Thank you to the team who brought it into being and to our special guests who so generously gave of their time and their insights. Please remember to share it with all in your network who you think it can help. Sharing help that really helps is what makes the world go round.